Hi, this is Tony Ruggiero here, and you're listening to my Tour Coach Podcast. Tour Coach Podcasts come from my stories, the interviews, my roundtable discussions, the day-to-day interaction with the people that I teach in my journey in the game of golf, whether it's tour players that I teach or tour players that have fired me, or heck, it's other teachers that I think the world of and respect, or it's mental coaches, performance coaches, or hey, maybe it's just people that have made an indelible mark on my teaching. Whatever it is, I hope this helps you learn more about the playing, the teaching, or enjoying the great game of golf. I sure as heck have fun doing this. I hope you all enjoy listening to it. We've got great sponsors. We've always got great guests. And one thing that we for sure do here on the Tour Coach is we keep it real. None of this is scripted. This is just authentic. This is the discussions and the day-to-day interactions that we have as the dew sweepers and teaching and trying to help all of you play better golf. And look, if you enjoy our instruction and you're somebody wanting to get better, why don't you come see us and get help for your game with our world-famous retreats, which are going to be at Old Palm Golf Club in Palm Beach Gardens with my good friends Mark Hackett, Dan Terleski, Colby Touye, Dr. Greg Carton, and a host of many, many more. Or you can come see me at my studio in Mobile, Alabama, or at the Preserve Golf Club. And remember, everything you need to play better golf is always going to be available for you at dewsweepersgolf.com. You can find out where I am and how to be on a podcast if you go there. Enjoy this edition of The Tour Coach. Ian. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
Merry Christmas.
Out there. I know Wayno's on. He's got to leave a little early to go to an accountant. But Wayne, is that a new jacket there? That looks like a new – that's new. He's got his volume off, Jackson. You mean, but anyways, we're going to talk – actually, this is Parsons' topic he came up with today, for today, and I thought it was great. We got a great turnout for it. Hopefully everybody has a happy holidays and gets a little bit of time off and away from teaching a little bit. Although I know some people are busier than others at this time, but we're going to talk about technology and, Parsons, why don't we pull up the question here?
I had a couple emailed or messaged in.
Yeah, go ahead. I think we got some good topics. So, Parsons, go ahead. JP, why don't you go ahead and start with your thoughts on technology and the use of technology, as well as the development of teachers.
You know, I just think there's so much great stuff out there to keep us learning and keep us fresh. And, you know, there's so many paths you can really go down. You know, I know Tony was down at our place and we were using the gears with their specialist, Michael Neff. You know, so you can go down the 3D, the biomechanics kind of route. You can go down the launch monitor, TrackMan route. There's all sorts of incredible technology coming out for putting. I know the PuttView have got some new things coming out. You know, some of the apps to keep track of things, whether you're using the stack or you're using your Fusionetics for fitness or mytpi.com for fitness. You know, all of those sorts of things, I think. You know, there's such a plethora of different ways you can go about it these days. And I think for the young teachers who are listening, you know, I think it's very important, you know, number one, with the actual devices to recognize that, you know, they are diagnostic devices. There's no substitute for creating solutions, which of course comes from experience, but to be able to illustrate what you're doing and why you're doing it through something like 3D or something like TrackMan or something like CapToe, you know, can be very poignant for the person who's receiving the information. And, you know, I feel it's a really cool topic, Tony. I think, you know, we could nearly go down the list of things and go through a little bit of a back and forth as to, you know, the way we've used them and how, you know, they've maybe made us learn or how they've made the experiences we've had with students more valuable.
Sure. I mean, go ahead. You go ahead and start. You start with a piece of technology that you use and take us through some stuff.
Well, I think the 3D stuff is very, very, you know, apparently useful. I mean, there is no question that when we look at golf swings on video, we are looking at them in two dimensions. And we are going to be doing that. There's no way around that. And when you have some experience of 3D, you realize, you know, back in the days when we used the AMM system in Dubai, which is an electromagnetic system, many of you out there would be familiar with it, but you effectively have a piece of hardware that casts an electromagnetic bubble around an area, and a player wears sensors on his body or her body, and then we digitize basically the body parts, and that comes up with a with a 3D model, and that is wires, you know, coming out of the back of the player. You kind of feel like you're being plugged into the matrix. But, you know, it was a wonderful way for me. You know, that piece of equipment was a wonderful way for me to really start to understand the golf swing in three dimensions. You know, not only obviously looking at sway and slide, but looking at thrust and ups and downs and side bends and bends, and of course rotations. So moving on from that, the gear system that we have at Sea Island, I think is fantastic as well. It's some different information, you know, that I'm getting more savvy with, I hope. And it's an optical system, kind of similar to what you would see in, you know, generation of like EA Sports and things like that, where there are cameras on the wall, and the player wears markers. And the markers, obviously, they break the cameras, and we get a full 3D representation of the golfer. So, you know, I think to really adequately see the pattern that you're trying to illustrate and then understand how to maybe improve, break, you know, improve that pattern, I think 3D motion capture is a fantastic thing. And, you know, you've got to be careful, because some guys really want to hear it and some guys want to talk about it, and other guys are, you know, they're kind of still a little bit in awe of it. And I do think in years to come, you know, I know the sports box thing, Tony, you've got to look at and we've got to look at, where you're taking video and being able to directly turn it into a 3D model on your phone, which is, you know, it's definitely where things are going. I wouldn't be surprised in 20 years if we're teaching with some sort of holographic kind of images and things like that to really understand, you know, where
I hope I'm retired by then.
Yeah, you and a hologram would be an interesting sight. You know, I think if you can imagine that, though, you know, gears can kind of do that. AMM can do that as well. But to be able to have that, you know, the ability to look at it from the front and the side and above and from different angles, you know, it can generate just such a different picture for the student.
I think, to me, I mean, this is my advice. And, I think whatever you know, as you get into, I think 3D, we kind of started at the top end. They're crazy expensive. I don't know that a lot of people starting out are going to have as much access to it, but I think you should. I think one thing people have to be careful with is to just jump in there and start talking about stuff that they may not understand or may know, you know? And I think it's important to, I had a young lady in here today that was asking questions about teaching and being mentored. And I was like, I think you need to research the parts on 3D. If you're going to talk about 3D or it's force plates, whatever it is, research the things that, you know, that you look for and kind of develop an understanding of some things and start with that before you jump in there and start trying to talk about everything. And that, I mean, you know, I'm new to it as well. I've looked at some different things and I really enjoyed JP the time I spent over there with you a week and a half ago. But kind of my thought process, even during that, with Michael Neff, was like asking you questions just based on the things that I look for, not getting like caught up on extraneous things that I might not use or care about in the short term. You know, that's just food for thought.
Well, I think it's good. That's great. That's great advice too, for, you know, for younger teachers as they're like generating their feels as to what they like to see in the golf swing and things like that. If you can kind of stay in your, you know, stay in your lane of preferences, and, you know, you'll be drawn out of that a little bit, and it might change over the years. But if you're right, if you try and do all that stuff at once, it could be a bit tricky.
Yeah. I think especially when you're starting down a road of technology, I see lots of teachers that they feel like because they have it, they got to start telling everybody everything it does, you know,
100%.
And I think you get too much going on and so forth. So I think that's just my two cents. Jackson, next question.
So first question we got on the list, what tech would you invest in first if you're trying to grow your student base?
An iPhone and a tripod and a microphone.
Yeah, I used to be old school, where I used to think you had to have a laptop and all that, a good camera. But then I bought this new iPad several months ago because my computer finally crashed. And I mean, I think that the video quality and the stuff you can do on this, on the iPad is so good and so easy to communicate with people. That's where I would start. And I mean, and then just get you a good app. There's a bunch of good apps out there. I use OnForm. I know you use another one, JP.
I've used Coach Now, which has been great. Right. Like the way we work Tony, when we're traveling a bit, and
yeah,
it's easy to stay in touch with people. People send videos. And sometimes you just answering, you know, one liners and just talking through what, sure, you know, maybe what they've sent. But again, it's that ability to remain in contact with people and keep the communication channels open. I know Clipped are doing a nice job with some stuff that's coming online. You know, we're working with those guys at Sea Island. That's going to be a bit more of a total dive into your game. You know, this the Clipped software, which will be pretty cool. You know, Coach Now has been great for me, and I know there's some others out there. But you know, I think you can do a lot of things, to your point, from your iPad. You know, as long as you're filming properly, and you know you're filming static when you need to, and you know, and then you're illustrating things when you need to for players. I'm not so sure that I would ever have felt like, you know, certainly maybe right back at the start, I can imagine how TrackMan could have been a really frightening but a good investment, because it was so, you know, it was so rare really to see one. You know, it's still a very expensive piece of equipment. You know, you really need to write up a business plan and really figure out how you're going to recoup that, because you're nearly taking them. You're basically buying a small car for, you know, for your golf business.
Yeah, you know, I think I love the iPad. I would, you know, I think that it's like everything, like the price of things keep coming down now. I would, you know, I've told Jackson my thoughts on this before. Like, if I was starting out, I'd get a good iPad. And if you're going to have a launch monitor, you know, that GC3 or the Launch Pro by Bushnell is like, for the price, $4,000 or whatever it is, I think it's really, really good. I mean, I travel with it and use it, and I think it lets you do games and different things with it, as well as equipment fitting, or as well as get some data. So, I mean, I think now it's actually easier, JP, than it ever was, or Wayne, certainly when you got into it and when I got into it, to be able to get some pretty good tech for a significantly less money than what you used to have to do, where you could make a nice presentation.
All right, next question. Which technology has influenced your teaching methodology the most? If you had to purchase the same types of technology you currently have, would you make the same decisions?
The biggest influence on my teaching is the Swing Catalyst, because when I got started teaching under Wayne, as most people here know, and Hank, and I began developing pivots as a way to survive, and it kind of came what I've looked for and work on a lot in the golf swing. It was the first thing that I found that I could help me kind of show people and start figuring some of that stuff out. So that would be, for me, the most important. And I don't think I would change. I've bought all of those dang things as they've gone along. So it probably wouldn't change with me. You know, I bought some others and stuff that I just ended up not using. They're in that storage closet back there. I could probably do a little bit of a yard sale if anybody wants some KVS and old stuff around here. But anyways, that's what I would use. JP, Wayno, what about you?
I would stick with the force plate I bought from Swing Catalyst. I think that's great information. I think you can learn a lot from it. I think it's affordable. Something that the young guys could get started with for sure. I think the most important thing is, you know, they'll kind of see with their own eyes and with some numbers on a computer, an iPad, whatever case may be, whether what they're seeing is what's really happening. And that, I think that's the biggest key is seeing if what you're thinking is what's really happening. And, you know, can you learn from that? And can you move forward from that? I mean, all the other stuff is great, but I for sure would do that again. JP.
You know, the 3D stuff for me was the biggest, Tony. I had to transport the system from Dallas, I think, to Dubai. And then, you know, I pretty much had to rig it up and figure out how it works. And I had Dr. Greg Rose on the phone telling me, you know, what information to look for. And it gave me just a great understanding, I felt, of like how people were moving in space. And that was from a purely teaching perspective, like my understanding of how bodies move and stuff, that helped me an awful lot.
Yeah, it's great stuff. I just never really was exposed to it. It's interesting how you develop based on things you're exposed to. You
Absolutely.
Know, there wasn't really any 3D stuff that close that I had access to for a long time. you know? So I think that if you have that, you know, it's great.
Yeah. You know, Tony, a good long while ago, you remember this when Tim Breon was at Greystone, and they had that TaylorMade mat system. That was my first introduction to the 3D thing. And I would take, you know, a bunch of my students out there to him, and he was always gracious with his time. And, you know, that was one thing. I was scared at first to go out there because I didn't know if what I was telling the people was going to be what was showing up on the 3D thing. And, you know, I got in there, and thank goodness it was pretty good. You know, the information I was trying to give out and what was really happening. And I thought, I mean, the more I got into that, the more I did that with him, I mean, I thought it was just the greatest thing in the world to get your students in front of that and give them a clear understanding, let them really see what's happening and how it would match up with your teaching. And I think, you know, I think that gives, you know, the teacher tons of credibility. And obviously, you know, if the information is good, then the students are going to get better, and hey, they're going to continue to love that technology because they're getting better. Right.
Yeah. Jackson, next. Well, we got a lot of questions, Jackson. So let's try to get to as many of them as we can.
All right. In a perfect indoor teaching center, what tech would you have for full swing, putting, the whole gambit?
Well, for me, I mean, you know, I've got a Foresight, and I've also got a Bushnell simulator, and I've got the swing catalyst system. You know, I've got the 3D force plate. I've also got one with a balance plate in my indoor. I mean, for me, I would love that. Is it PuttView, JP, the thing? I know y'all have it. Is, I would love one of those, but I need to have it here where I don't get fired by four people to be able to buy one of those. Yet. So, I would love one of those, but like, I'm pretty happy with what I have. For me, it's very functional and it works. I think, you know, it does enough. Next.
All right. Could you give an example of a recreational player receiving 3D capture well, and an example of it being received poorly?
JP, this is your field. Not that you've ever given one poorly.
Well, I think that, you know, I think if you, let's say you took a recreational player, I'm not going to think of an exact example, but a recreational player who has a lot of pelvic slide towards the top of the backswing, which is, you know, obviously it's diagnosable on video as well. But, you know, when you can show that person that, you know, the average tour player sways to the right with his pelvis, you know, 1.2 inches, and you're swaying to the right with your pelvis 4.6 inches. All of a sudden that guy's going, right, okay, so I'm like 3.5 inches completely out of position based on, you know, what a tour player would do. And then, you know, with either biofeedback or, you know, doing some other little gears captures, you can help them with that sensation, show them it again on the system, and then be able to, you know, to like work them through that process of, well, there's your diagnosis, this is your feel, okay, now hit one, all right, there's another number, and then now we can really work on it. And that becomes a very clear thing in a player's brain. So I think, you know, little being able, like Tony said before, like target into the little things that are, you know, that are near and dear to you and that you really prefer to see, you know, and then you can dress your lesson up around that.
Yeah.
Okay. JP, you touched on it a little bit earlier, but what can we learn from the 3D and all of the different versions?
I think that AMM, with their integration with the TPI 3D software, they did a fantastic job in like giving you like a blueprint on the Big 12 swing faults, and then being able to diagnose golf swings from 3D within the Big 12, so that, you know, they would have captured enough golfers at Oceanside to know what the average range of pelvic sway was and the average range of thrust was. So then, you know, you could begin to see whether a player was outside of the ranges. And, you know, that's kind of what we would have done working with that system. I thought that was very clever. Gears is a little less graph based, but there are some, you know, situations, you know, Tony and I enjoyed, you know, some of the stuff. Again, it was fairly new to me, like where the center of the pelvis is relative to where the center of the torso is in space with the best golfers in the world. And I think it's a, you know, there's obviously, there's still some conceptual learning around that as to what they're doing while they're, you know, we say they're in space, which basically is a position, but they're in motion when they're in that position. But anyway, we could talk about that for hours. And then, you know, one of the things that Michael did a great job of explaining to us was they were matching, for example, the amount of spine bend away from the target to the amount of torso rotation. And those two numbers are really quite close together. One of the biggest numbers that we had was Brian Harmon. Tony, he was 50 degrees bent to the left in his case, and 50 degrees open. Tyson Alexander was a beautiful, like 30 degrees bent, 30 degrees open. Rory's 33. When you're matching those, when you're matching those two up, you're not guaranteed, but you've got much more chance of getting a square club face through the hip and through the post impact area.
Yeah, I thought it was great. And two comments on that, Jax, will move. One, I think that people need to be careful with, like, when you get these things, just only focusing on tour average, but to try to understand the person in front of you. And JP, you were awesome. I never heard tour average once in the whole thing with your players. You were just, you understood their tendencies and what you were working on. But two, I'm kind of curious. I would like to, we were talking before we came on the air, like, about all the work I do with Colby. And I know you got so many folks up there at Sea Island, but I would like to combine what I do with the fitness stuff. And I've used it with Swing Catalyst, but also do some of those drills and stuff that I do with Colby, and then put the people on 3D and see what it changes. You know, I mean, that's for another topic and another day, JP, but I think that'd be
It's really cool. We did some experiments like that in Dubai. I remember Claude and I were having people hit impact bags, like live hitting impact bags whilst wired up on 3D, and seeing how different the like stabilization patterns and things were, which was, you know, really quite cool. So to your point, Tony, I think we could, we could spend 2023 doing that.
Yeah, we're going to do some more of that. Jackson, next question.
What numbers on a launch monitor do you find to be the most important to target when working with a student?
I look at face to path. Justin?
I don't think a million miles. I think spin axis is a, you know, spin axis is a nice number for people to just recognize what the golf ball's doing as it leaves the club face. You know, I think it's, it's something I would look at. And obviously, you know, you've got your distances and your spins.
Yeah.
I try to stay on ball data. Because I worry sometimes a wee bit about the club, because it doesn't see the golf club, but sees, you know, and then the GC quad, then it sees the golf club and doesn't see the ball for as long. So it's making more predictions relative to the golf ball, and TrackMan's making more predictions relative to the golf club.
That's why when I'm teaching, if I'm using one for teaching, I use the quad, because I can't get the club head data. I don't really use TrackMan for any of that. But
yeah.
Jackson?
Do you think technology has increased the accountability of coaches?
Go ahead and start with that, JP. I'm marinating on an answer here.
I would say without question. I mean, ultimately in all of our positions, the score the player's shooting when they're playing in tournaments, or if your golfer's progressing from being somebody who's never played before to getting on the golf course and playing nine holes, or if the player's progressing from shooting 120 to 110, you know, you should always hold yourself accountable to the scores that your players are shooting, because you can have great 3D, and you can look great on video, and you can put great TrackMan numbers up, and you go out in the golf course and shoot whatever number. Those things don't tally up. So for me, it's always like, is the golfer getting better, getting worse, or staying the same? And that's, you know, that's where I would always judge myself.
Agree. Yeah. I think you can use technology to make things look kind of however you want them to look. It's like an accountant. But anyways, I think still you're ultimately judged by, like, are your players getting better? Are the people you teach getting better? Do you have a kid winning the club championship? Do you have a guy in your area that's, you know, shot his personal best? Those types of things, I think, as you're coming up, are way more important than, you know, whether people's, you know, whatever, launch angles are better or forces are improved. Jackson?
JP, you had mentioned this in a text. You talked about it just really briefly when we came on, diagnostics versus solutions. Did you want to go back into that?
You know, again, I think it's very important to realize that when, you know, when we're using this information, we're basically, we've got an X-ray machine, which is a video camera. So we can show a person how, you know, how terrible something looks or how pretty it looks. And then we've got an MRI, which is a 3D motion capture, or could be a TrackMan, which is effectively an MRI for a golf ball. It's telling us what way it's spinning backwards, sideways, all of that kind of stuff. But, you know, if you think of it from the medical professional's world, you know, the doctor will end up taking the MRI and then giving you a diagnosis based on his best reading of an MRI. And whatever he tells you, then you have to go and do, whether that's treatment or it's movement or whatever it is that you're supposed to, in order to create a better outcome. And I think it's important for the young teachers out there to recognize that you could have a TrackMan, swing catalyst, 3D motion capture, and all of that stuff, but you've still got to be able to give people solutions to their golfing problems.
Yeah, I mean, that medical analogy is great. I mean, because, you know, you have people go to multiple doctors that look at the same tests and the same, you know, the same thing, and they come up with different ways to treat things and different diagnoses. So, I mean, I think that just because numbers are a certain way or data is a certain thing, doesn't mean that everybody's going to come up with what the same cause is or the same fix. So,
JP, we probably got time for one more question before you get out of here.
Well, I'm good. We got plenty of time.
Okay. Are the old ways of teaching dying? If a coach doesn't have access to more than video analysis, are they at a severe disadvantage?
Say that again.
Are the old ways of teaching dying? If a coach doesn't have access to more than video analysis, are they at a severe disadvantage?
Go ahead and start it, JP.
No, absolutely not, relative to the fact that golf is still a game of feel, and too much information put into the brain makes us use a part of the brain that is not associated with performance. So at the highest level, what we find is that the players are very much just focused in on their routines and their triggers, and they're playing the game by feel. So relative to that, the less very complicated information you can give someone, probably the better the response is going to be. So in that way, no, the old teaching is not dying. However, we have to also recognize that we are in a situation where, you know, if a really good player turns up and I'm just standing in a field with an old holy pair of trousers and a worn out baseball cap, I mean, he may not trust what I'm saying just based on my experience and the fact that I have nothing around me. Whereas if he turns up at Sea Island, we got everything. I can say the most minimal amount of things, and they're going to trust what I'm saying. So, you know, your image and the way you present yourself and the technology that you surround yourself with and your the information then that you purvey will, of course, have an influence on the way that people perceive that instructional experience. But, you know, I remember, you know, and I know it's maybe a little bit the old way, but, you know, going into Butch's place, and he always had B1 running, and he would have all this stuff up on the walls and all the teaching aids, and he would give the simplest golf lessons possible. And Tony, you know that.
Oh yeah.
And he's still the best that ever was in our chosen sport. And he chooses to try and do it as simply with as much humor and, you know, simplistic delivery as he can.
I think it goes back to a previous question where, you know, as long as the people that you're working with are getting better, your business will grow. I always believe that if you figure out how to make people better, you know, you'll do okay. And, but I do think nowadays, like you said, JP, I think like you have to be at least versed in a little bit of this technology to be able to answer questions, even if you don't have access to all of it. Otherwise, I don't think with all the information that's out there, you'll be able to, especially if you're young and starting up, I think you got to at least be aware of it, be versed in it, be able to answer questions about it. And you probably realistically nowadays to start like you said, you got to start with an iPad and something, at least be able to, you know, I think the whole appearance that you give, how professional you are, still is really important, from how you dress to being on time to having all your shit set up and a format in which you go. I think that's still really important. And while we all may use iPads, I mean, just walking out there with nothing set up and 3 minutes late isn't the right way to go to build a business either.
100% agree with that.
Jackson, come on, one more. We can squeeze one more out of JP. Those people at that Christmas party don't even want him there anyways.
That's true.
If your players are sending videos, Coach Now or Sportsbox, how do you ensure the angle is the same as when at home? Do you have a procedure for them to create that viewpoint?
That's a JP or Wayne question, because my camera angles are terrible. I stand ahead, and Wayne. Rest my phone on my belly. Wherever it is, that's where I film from.
I'll take it then. I think that I probably give 15% back from any video. I think when you've looked at as many videos as probably we have, you can kind of sense if a camera angle's a little bit offline. But at the same time, you don't really know what the player's hitting towards half the time. If somebody really wants a little bit more of a thorough diagnostic, I will ask them to ensure that the camera's in the right place, ensure that they're aiming in the right place for the alignment rod down, and describe to me the shot, the strike, what the ball did in the air, how it performed, and what they felt during the swing. Because I think there's, and I've struggled with this, because I think it'd be a fantastic thing for me to be able to say, well, I can give golf lessons to people all over the world. They don't have to come to Sea Island. I could sit in this chair doing it, but I just don't think we can. I think you've got to be there. You've got to see the player. You've got to get a feeling of the player. You've got to hear the strike on the ball. You've got to see the golf ball in the air. You've got to see the player's responses. And 85% of that you don't get on online instruction, my opinion.
JP, that's what I tell all my high school kids when they're about to leave for college. I tell them, you send me all the videos you want, but you got to send me something that has alignment sticks down, aimed at something with you set up correctly, because if I don't see that, I can't make any judgment of what the swing is, because I don't have any idea what you're aiming at. So I don't think you can make conclusions what's going right or wrong if you don't know how they're set up and you don't know, you know, you don't know what they're doing. You don't know if it's a good shot with a bad swing or a bad shot with a good swing, right? And yep. And so I do think those setup things are really, really important. And that, you know, that's why you want to be, you know, with your best players as much as you can, because, you know, you're there and you're watching it happen, right?
I had a conversation with one of the tour guys about this, and I said, I think that I could take the player who finished last in the tournament at any week and tell you six great things he does in his golf swing and six things we should all copy. And I could take the player who won the golf tournament and tell you six things that you should try to avoid doing. So it's, you know, and to your point, Wayne, it's kind of a little bit finite with that. Like, you're almost like a lawyer in that regard. You're making too many professional guesses, and then obviously with this conversation on technology and diagnostics, what we're trying to avoid is guessing. And when you're to the person who asked the question's point, if you're just throwing a video in there with nothing attached to it, no alignment rods, no understanding of target, if we're trying to diagnose that, we're just guessing, and we shouldn't be guessing.
Yeah, what are you even looking at? That's right.
That's exactly. I always start, anytime somebody sends me a video, I just always ask, you know, what did the ball do? What's the ball doing, right? You got to have, without seeing it and standing there, obviously, but, you know, heck, I mean, I remember one time I had a tour player send me a video, and I automatically assumed it was bad, right? You know, you get a video from a guy on a Wednesday, and I replied with two things I didn't like, and he replied, I striped that. I was sending it to you to tell you how good I was hitting it. And I said, never mind. Meant that for somebody else. Keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah. I always ask my tour guys or mini tour guys or college guys, you know, how's the ball acting? You know, swing looks pretty good. How's the ball acting? You know, I want to hear their feedback on the ball. And then you can kind of, you know, you can kind of make a better educated guess looking at just a simple video on your phone. That's for sure.
Brilliant. Love it.
All right. You got to go, JP, or you got one more question?
I'll have one more question. I'm starting to enjoy myself.
I knew we could keep you for an extra couple.
I'm going to listen to one more, T, and then I got to bust out of here.
All right, we'll do one more, and then we'll go.
We've talked a little bit about force plates. So any preferences there when you guys are looking at swings?
That's a Tony question.
Yeah, preferences on the – I mean, I talked to some really great young professionals at the Everglades Club last week down in Palm Beach. Very nice place. And I just said, like, you know, I think – I still use my stuff very, like, one of the biggest things I use my swing catalyst for is balance at address and balance during the golf swing, right? Like, you know, I mean, those are still things that I use it for. And I, you know, I'm a big rotation guy, not a ton of sliding all or lateral movement all over the place. So I still use it a lot just to show that type of stuff. But really, you know, I mean, you'd be surprised how simple the stuff I use it for. Jackson, you've worked with me for a zillion times. And I mean, that thing could do a ton more than I use it for. But again, I still stick, go to where we started. I still stick with the things that I understand and believe in. And I really don't, I'm not saying I don't ask other questions and don't try other stuff, but that would be something off the record. I would ask JP or Wayne or somebody, what do you think about that? I would never do it with a student. I stick 100% with the things that I know and that I can control a little bit and that I believe in when I'm using that stuff. I know that probably didn't ever answer the question, but, you know.
I mean, just for again, young teachers out there, I started following Steve Furlong, and I think his Instagram handle is something like SF Golf Perform or something like that. Based out of the UK, he's worked with a bunch of players. Ollie Wilson started winning again. I've seen a lot of Max Kiefer's in there. Does a really nice job in illustrating some of the ground forces. And, you know, he really, he goes that, you know, that's basically his business. It's like ground forces. That's, he set his stall out to do that. And I definitely think for those of you on Instagram, I would give him a follow because I've learned a lot from some of his videos and some of the work he's put in.
Yeah, I think the athletic motion guys do a lot of good stuff on the force plates and stuff too. I mean, again, I think you need to take that info and figure it out for yourself a little bit, what you think and all of that. Just don't take everything as gospel. But yeah, it's great stuff. Jackson, awesome work tonight. Wayne, thanks for sitting in. JP, enjoy the company Christmas party. Give everybody my best.
I will do. Thanks, everyone, and Merry Christmas.
Hey, Merry Christmas everybody.
Thank you. Thanks for sitting into this. And do me a favor, everybody, send Jackson an email and let us know things you'd like to see and talk about in the upcoming year. We're going to keep this going. And whether it's the business side, teaching side, whatever it is you want to know, let us know to have here on the forum as well as on the tour coach. If there's people you want us to bring on and talk to, we're happy to do it. We'll look forward to a great 23, and everybody have a Merry Christmas.
Thanks, Tate. See ya.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Tour Coach. I want to take a minute and thank Cordy Walker and Golf Science Lab, as well as my sponsors Strixon, Buick, Bushnell, and Vineyard Vines for helping make all of this possible and helping me share my insights with you. If you like what you've heard, why don't you check out more on the Dew Sweepers channel on YouTube, as well as the Dew Sweeper on Instagram, or go to dewsweepersgolf.com to find out more about my teaching, my travels, and where you can find out more about me.